catch up on all the live shows right here on africatechradio.com.
Welcome to this episode powered by Premli and Africa Tech Radio on emerging fraud trends, strategies for proactive prevention. In this episode, the significance of biometric authentication in countering identity theft and account takeover will be discussed, with emphasis on the importance of strengthening anti-fraud efforts through information exchange. The panelists for this discussion would be the Director of Service Delivery at Ethno Cyber Limited, Goodness Opani, the Infrastructure and Cloud Engineer at Premli, and Infrastructure and Cloud Engineer at Premli, Ileri Fadeyi, and Cybersecurity Engineer at CyberSoc Africa, Farouk Musa. And the moderator for this panel session is Caleb Goodness Ibe, Lead Information Security Analyst, CIDFI, and SOC and Incident Response Trainer at CyberSafe. This webinar also delves into the benefits and challenges of data sharing to proactively combat fraud across industries. Take a listen.
So, Goodness Opani, in your experience, what are the most significant technology-related challenges when combating fraud? And in your position as a CTO, how have you addressed it?
All right. Thank you very much. My namesake, Goodness, and I'm so happy that I have a namesake and Goodness on this platform. So I think we should just call each other namesakes. thank you very much, ATR, for arranging this session. For me, in our experience, especially when it comes to fraud management, fraud prevention, of course, it's not a new topic. One of the challenges that we have seen, especially within a Nigerian context, is the fact that humans will always be our issue. The banks have to deal with them every time. So, you know, when it comes to cybersecurity, for example, they say that best of processes, you can have the best technology, but you can never really have the best of humans. So humans or the people will continue to be the most important in an organization, as well as the weakest in the chain of cybersecurity. And that is always one of the major reasons that we have. In fact, we have so many instances where, even with all of the various awareness campaigns that are being done, you find more and more people still falling prey to the same fraudulent campaigns that we see very commonly. In fact, one of the CISO meetings once mentioned to me that a person, for example, would receive an email from his bank telling him, please don't give out your PIN or password to someone. And he would never read it. However, if somebody sends him on that same phone a text message saying, we have credited you so amount, please go, that is what moves him. So, you will not blame people. The economy is not smiling, the environment is not smiling, all of that. So, again, that will continue to present its challenge, the human factor. Now, another thing that, another challenge that we see, especially with regard to implementation of solutions, is false positives. Okay, so a lot of fraud detection and prevention solutions must have been put in place. But then again, you will start to see a lot of false positives with some of these solutions. Again, because you're trying to manage user experience with security of applications and try to integrate fraud prevention or detection solutions. One of the issues with regard to that is the fact that from time to time, you begin to see a lot of false positives, especially when it comes to traditional fraud detection solutions. And because of the prevalence of this false positive, especially because of the fact that these fraud detection solutions have not been able to differentiate between actual, real, verified persons or customers and those who have come to come and steal from the machine. That margin of error is very important, is very key. And so it becomes more and more difficult for people to begin to adopt and accept the usage of fraud detection solutions for their work. Another major challenge with the fact that as we progress, technologies continue to evolve. In the past, we used to have identity fraud, for example, credit card fraud and tax fraud, all the different frauds, you can name it. And we generally have a lot of them. But what has happened? I mean, why these fraud conversations regarding fraud have become prevalent is because of the fact that we have begun to adopt more and more technologies to be able to automate the traditional processes that we used to have. And so identity have shifted from physical to digital. So you now have digital identities in the digital space as against physical identities that you will have. Organizations would invest in the beginning in perimeter-based security solutions like your firewall, for example, network firewall and all of the different firewalls that you use to protect your environment for people not to come in, because people usually go and try to hack and try to enter into the system. In recent times, all those perimeter-based security solutions have become obsolete, like because hackers in recent times don't stress themselves to try to hack their way into an organization or try to create fraudulent transactions by way of trying new and newer world methods. So it just simply adopts a person's identity, a trusted person's identity, and commit fraud. All right. So and that again has become the challenge, how to be able to manage identity security for customers. And of course, with every challenge, there's always solutions. And one of the things that we always talk about, a recommendation for management of identity security. So identity security is a fundamental core of everything fraud, managing the identities of people, identity security. So in managing that, you want to implement, again, use technologies. But before using technologies, the first and most important thing is to work on the people, all right? Work on the people. Rather than focusing more on your perimeter network firewall, you want to focus more on a human firewall. So your humans have to become the firewall as your first, really your first line of defense. So awareness campaigns can never be said to stop. And again, these awareness campaigns should not be something that we do based just to complete a compliance checklist. We want to make it targeted. I always talk to organizations that carry out awareness campaigns for the organization, banks and the rest. I said, don't just roll out awareness campaigns simply because you want to do it. So in a moment, you just send it out. Okay, today we're only going to focus on so and so. This is the topic for today, but you go and start reading upon it. No, it has to be targeted. So why don't you start with carrying out a simulated phishing campaign? A simulated phishing campaign is like a test phishing campaign on your employees. Let's even see the people who actually fall prey in my organization. That tells me the gap I actually see. So, and I can be able to work on that gap. So if, for example, in my organization, I have 3,000 staff, for example, I don't want to just keep on rolling out campaigns for 3,000 staff. I want to first start by doing a gap assessment, roll out a simulated phishing campaign, roll out phishing activity for my customer or even for my staff. And let me even try to see where the gaps do exist. All right, before I am now able to say, okay, out of these 3,000, I am now going to focus my attention on 1,000 or 2,000 or 500 staff who are actually falling prey to this particular phishing campaign. And that helps to actually stop or curb that particular problem when it comes to awareness. And that's one part. The second, again, is employing the use of technology. So you see, you know, technology is like it's like a tale of two forces, all right? You know, in every movie, you always have the actor, the villain, and the hero. Yeah, most times there's always two people. So the hero will never be the villain, and the villain will never be the hero. And we know how movies always end up. The hero always wins. Never real. But in the use of technologies, for example, artificial intelligence and machine learning, these two can also can function in those two roles. They can the use of technology can be both a villain and a hero, in defense of what you're using. So why the fraudulent attackers use technology to be able to advance in their way of combating fraud strategies. Organizations, and again, those who run the technology for organizations will begin to adopt artificial intelligence as a way of combating fraudulent transactions. And artificial intelligence, and more importantly, machine learning, because artificial intelligence is not really complete, except it is machine learning powered, because and that helps you to be able to reduce false positives, which is one of these challenges you talked about with a common fraud detection solutions. Because you don't want to start blocking or start preventing. First thing you want to do is to start learning your users, start learning your customers, start understanding their profiles, build a profile-based and risk-based profile for your customers so that you understand their behaviors. And in the event you have a customer or a person who assumes that identity and begins to carry out transactions, you can able to compare the behavior of the one versus the other based on what you have gathered from the identity of the verified person. So again, these are some of the things we always recommend and try to organizations to be able to implement.
Thank you very much, Goodness. I particularly like what you said about your user actually being your first line of defense. Like I always tell people, you can actually invest as much as you want into your security infrastructure, but if the end users of those of that particular security infrastructure are not aware of risks, are not aware of loopholes, it just renders your security budget useless, because you can purchase the best firewalls, the best endpoint security solutions. If people are not aware of security threats and how they can actually come in, all of those things will actually not offer the solutions we want them to offer. Back to you, Mileri. Now, we've actually heard so much about the fraud campaigns. We've heard so much about the social engineering attacks. Now, how can individuals and organizations in Nigeria better educate themselves about social engineering tactics to help them prevent against fraud?
Okay. So just taking off what Goodness has said, I don't think you can have enough awareness campaigns. I think that's always the first level. For an individual, we owe it to people to actually get this information out there. Let people make this information available for just the everyday person, ensuring that, well, they know that these tactics exist and how they can prevent them. I feel like the saving or one of the key factors that would save a person from a fraudulent attack or a social engineering attack would be having information, knowing that, well, this is an attack, being able to identify that this is an attack and being able to avoid the attack. Then, well, like I said, making online resources, trainings, and cybersecurity trainings available just so that people have the awareness. The awareness is really key on an individual level. But when you move to organizations, right, you, as an organization, the first line of defense is always your employees. You could do every single thing you like. You could have the best security facilities and everything. If an employee should fall prey to these attacks, then you are vulnerable. So the first thing is actually having employee trainings. And I know it's a normal thing in every organization to actually have employee awareness trainings, but it doesn't end there, because most of these employee trainings are just to satisfy, oh yes, we train our employees. But I think, like Goodness mentioned, simulating these attacks internally, sending out a phishing email, just see who are the people in my organization that are vulnerable to this kind of attack. And then educating those people. Obviously, you still educate at large, but educating, making sure, pointing focus at those kind of people that you know that are susceptible to this kind of attacks. And you have, obviously, your security policies have to be top-notch and they have to be followed. It's one thing to have your policies written, but you have to enforce these policies. Multi-factor authentication also. You do not want a situation whereby once a user's, for example, password and email is compromised, the user's identity is compromised. You want to have two levels at least of authentication. So if it's a form of MFA, maybe Google Authenticator or Microsoft Authenticator, you need to have those. You have to have an incident response plan, very importantly, because it's one thing to be able to or to try and prevent these things, but how do you respond? How do you act when these things happen? How fast can you prevent a spread? How fast can you prevent a cybersecurity attack from being a full-blown downturn? You need to be able to have your incident response plans in place. Then you need to have regular assessments of your system, because whether you like it or not, we are human beings, and human beings are prone to, mistakes, whether by negligence or even deliberately. There's always a gap. These regular assessments would ensure that gaps are identified before an actual issue occurs. Then obviously you need to, information is the savior in this point. You need to be able to share this information. If there's an incident, I think raising awareness to your peers would actually help, so that they don't fall victim to these same attacks. That's about it for me.
Thank you very much, Larry. Over to you, Nelson. I don't think we have people speaking so much about threat intelligence and the importance of threat intelligence in combating fraud in Nigeria. In your opinion, how important is that information exchange between various industries for strengthening anti-fraud efforts, and what are the key challenges we've actually experienced in this space?
Okay, thank you so much, Goodness. In fact, I think, like I used to tell a lot of my friends, when it comes to cybersecurity, visibility and, you know, information sharing is very key. Like, we will do very little when we don't share information. And I think before now, one of the biggest issues that we've had in Nigeria is that different key industries don't have threat intelligence platform, you know, like maybe a centralized KYC platform, you know, that is headed or, you know, let's say spearheaded like by organization like the Nigeria Interbank Settlement System, you know, especially in the financial sector. Because I think that what is happening right now is that a lot of our organizations, using the financial sector as a case study, is that we are doing a lot of intelligence independently. And let's see, let me give you a case study. Maybe there's a fraudulent attempt in a particular bank, you know, by somebody. And this same person is trying to, you know, carry out the same attempt in other banks, right? What is the possibility of these other banks getting to know, you know? So I think right now, aside from the quarterly meetings that are held by, you know, CISOs, I think that's one of those things that that we are doing now that is helping the industry. Where, you know, there's always like a regular quarterly meeting, so, you know, where CISOs get to meet and discuss, right? But I think in real time, one of the issues that we have is that we don't have a real time, you know, platform for threat intelligence that will help us, you know, kind of block these attacks. It's not when they did, it's already done, that we are having a meeting to discuss and say, okay, what's the way forward, right? But I think that we should have, like, I know one of the challenges around this kind of thing is regulatory, you know, because if there's a fraud case in a particular bank, you cannot just start revealing people's information. But I think we can come up with the kind of information that can be revealing to help other institutions within that same space, you know, have an idea so that we are able to fight this fraud, you know, proactively. I think the method we are using right now is a kind of reactive method. So to answer your question, having like a centralized information sharing platform, you know, would help us, you know, reduce fraud, provided that we can trust each other. I think that one of the other issues is in the area of trust. If different organizations within a particular sector, let's say the financial and the fintech industry, have an robust platform, I think there's something like that in the States that is spearheaded by the FBI. They have this platform where different CEOs and, you know, business owners get to register, and over time you get tips of what is happening. I really, I'm not so sure if we have platforms like that, but I know in the States there is that. So you get to see real time based on intelligence from, you know, from really the FBI. So you know how to better prepare your environment proactively. So, and especially in the part of having like a centralized, I don't know how possible that is, right? But from a security point of view, if there's like a centralized KYC platform, such that before a customer is onboarded for a business, right, you know, either in a fintech or in a bank, you want to do risk assessment, you know, instead of doing this individually with this, well, we have these different banks in individually with this partner, you know, the partner already have this done. It's uploaded in a centralized. So the follow-up activities will now be confirmation to confirm that, oh, okay, the details that you provided on this platform, you know, confirm that it is the same thing that you have, you know, like what we are trying to do with NIM and trying to, you know, trying to consolidate information. I think that is where it's going to help us from an organization point of view in terms of threat investigation and detection. So one of the things around biometrics is that it's mostly serve as like the double factor authentication, you know. And I think the emergence of biometrics, especially on mobile applications, and also for applications that you get to interface directly with, not just mobile, I think it's going to reduce a lot of data breaches. Because if you look at it, right, there was a recent report I was reading from Microsoft, and it says that multi-factor authentication would reduce the would solve over 80% of attacks, especially from social engineering, right? And I think the best, to answer your question, it's going to reduce the rate of fraud that we have. Like, for example, in the first quarter of this year, you also notice that because of the cashless policy, there's been an increase in the rate of fraud. Now, and if you look at the rate of successful social engineering attack or fraud, right, you will notice that these attacks were successful because there were no multi-factor authentication or biometrics. So I think for mobile applications that we are using, because of the cashless policy, wallets, you know, e-payment system, the use of biometrics should be encouraged more, aside from just using your username and password or your 4-digit PIN, because it's going to reduce the rate of data breaches across this platform. The first speaker spoke about phishing, various phishing attacks, various form of social engineering attacks. And those are like the first attack vectors. But, you know, when it's now coming to the usage of your applications, you know, to make transactions, having biometric as an additional layer of authentication, right, would prevent a lot of attack, I would say by 90%. Because in reality right now, multi-factor authentication, including biometrics, actually reduces any form of cyber attack, you know, especially the ones that are, you know, and directly to applications, you know, your social media accounts. Once you have some sort of 2FA, but biometric in particular would reduce drastically, because that seems to be like one of the strongest form of authentication. I think it's going to reduce it drastically. And that's what I think, yeah, because a lot of people just have your compromised username and password. Ibi, over to you. I don't know if I'm able to answer your question correctly.
Yes, you actually did. I think I particularly like what you mentioned about trust.
Goodness, what advice can you give to other CTOs in terms of aligning technology initiatives with their company's fraud prevention goals and objectives?
All right, thank you. Thank you so much. I think, first of all, starting out in the fraud prevention journey, one of the things that CTOs would want to do is to define objectives. And that is key, because if objectives are not clearly set, it will be difficult to be able to measure how far we have come and how far the organization has matured as a way of combating fraud cases. And again, the context, the objectives differ based on organizations. Earlier in this conversation, I think that's Larry or Nelson, I don't know, talked about the various types of fraud, because we talk about fraud generally, but again, it's context driven. For the banks, what they will consider fraud really is credit card fraud. For the tax office, for example, there is tax fraud, we have insurance fraud, we have then the general identity fraud that happens to everyone. So when organizations are setting out objectives, they want to set up objectives vis-a-vis the peculiar fraud cases that they're actually doing. And this that will mean aligning what you're going to set out as your fraud prevention strategy with what the business objectives are. That's why it's important that you are the CTO or the chief technology officer of an organization or whoever is running managing security. We need to understand first what exactly are my organization's business objectives. Okay. Let me understand what exactly do they face or what exactly are their issues. So he's able to define and define objectives and align them to what the business objectives of the organization are. And that is one. But secondly, and next, which is also important, I'll not dwell on that, is to be able to identify people within the organization that will become his champion, so to say, or his ambassadors for combating fraud within your organization. Banks today are a case study because, again, within Nigeria context, people really engage in fraudulent attacks. All these hackers, for example, I think that in many institutions around the world, people have different motives. The motives really are different when people carry out fraudulent activities. For some, they just carry it out as a way of show, of course, you know, just to show that, yes, we have better, your security defenses are weak, all of that. In Nigeria, and of course in Africa, the trend is usually the fact that people just carry this out as a way of just making money. So money is really the end goal for hackers and attackers here. So they carry out for the fraud activities as a way of attacking the money. And that is why banks are the most targeted when it comes to fraudulent activities. So the organizations, such as banks, would want to create some sort of champions, whether it's champions across the different departments within the organization, and be able to empower the champions, giving them the skills needed for them to be able to identify, detect, and also prevent these cyber threats from happening. Because the more people we have in the fighting force, the better it is. So it's not just left for the city alone to be able to engage in this war against fraud for the organization. So that's another thing. So having an army of people is usually very important. Identification of these people across the organization, one person across selected critical areas in the organization will also serve to help, by my experience. Creation of policies and procedures is something else that they want organizations, especially those running cybersecurity or information security or CTOs, want to look at. So you have policies and procedures that are established for your organization, how to manage fraud. What are risk ratios? I think Nasi mentioned, I've talked about risk, because you see, everything I will speak about cybersecurity is all tied to your risk. So you want to be able to create for yourself your risk management procedure or framework aligned to your organization and take inputs from other risk management frameworks like your 27005 or your 31000, that speaks to ISO 31000 framework. So again, you want to take inputs from there and create a robust risk management framework as a set guide or procedure for the organization. So it is that framework that is now going to help organizations as they begin to implement it, whether it's the application that is being used across their internet banking, the customer-facing sites, or whatever that is being used for carrying out services to the organizations. Then again, of course, technology. So putting in place technology is key. Putting in place technology. And again, we keep on talking about the fact that when going to go and shop for fraud detection solutions, because most times it's the responsibility of the CTO or the CISO to go out there, especially when they have to deal with the frauds relating to credit card or identity fraud activities, they go and shop for fraud detection solutions or fraud prevention solutions. I always tell people that it is important that you understand your use case scenarios, all right, before going out there to buy a shop, so that you don't end up buying the wrong solution, all right? It could be wrong, not necessarily because the solution or the product itself is wrong or is not doing, or because it's not just aligning to what you really want. So one of the things you want to do first before you even jump in for technology solutions to be able to achieve it is to create or come up with use case scenarios. One very important use case scenario that you can come up with will be something as simple as monitoring a user, for example. So if today your customer logs on to the internet banking platform today by, what was the time? It's 4:44, for example, carries out a transaction, and he logs in from Lagos, for example, then 3 or 5 minutes later, we find the same login from that same customer somewhere as far as Singapore or the United States, that is a problem. Again, that becomes a use case scenario for you. So that would be something that you want to say, okay, I'm going to use this use case scenario to look for a fraud detection solution that can be able to prevent that kind of scenario from happening. Because we know that it is highly impossible, unless you are becoming a magician, to carry out transaction here in Lagos, and 5 minutes later, you are in another, but even in another state here in Lagos. I mean, Lagos and Abuja, 5 minutes. I mean, how far is that possible? All right. So that would be a very fine use case scenario for use for people to go and shop for a fraud detection solution. And that will help. Okay. So building your fraud prevention strategy, defining a fraud prevention strategy that aligns to the business objectives of the organization, establishing a team. I used to call them your risk team, your risk champions, or your security champions, whatever you want to call the name, whatever you wanted the name to be. It's also key. Developing policies or procedures, especially the risk management framework, is key. And then identifying solutions, identifying technologies, or especially technologies that align to your specific use case, is very important, because we will use those use cases to now carry out assessments against 1, 2, 3, 4 products that you want to now buy, and see how those products handle those use case scenarios. And then you have brought the right fit technology to solve your current problem. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Gunnar. So, Larry, you work with Premly, and Premly provides solutions for identity verification, right? Now, can you share specific examples of successful biometric authentication implementations in Nigeria that have actually helped in the reduction of fraud incidents?
So you have a couple of them. You have the BVN implementation. You have the BVN implementation. You have the telecom sector policy that makes you have to register your SIM cards, right? Those kind of things. Basically, what it does is that it ties a biometric identity to a human being. So for example, before implementation of the telecom sector policy, what would happen is I could walk into any store and just get a SIM card, commit any kind of crime I would have loved to commit on it, because, well, it was untraceable back to me, and then get a new SIM card. But now what happens is, if you walk into a store to get a SIM card, you would probably have to get registered, and that registration process takes your biometric detail, right, and attaches that particular SIM card to you. So that's one very successful method, because what has happened is you are accountable for what happened with that your SIM card. Then nowadays, if you're going across the border, you want to travel, you would actually have to do a biometric authentication at the border, at the airport, before you can actually leave or come in. Those kind of things, those kind of, I would say little things, although they're not little, those kind of things actually keep people accountable for their actions. Then also, you look at there's a trend, I wouldn't say it's recent, but it's a trend of mobile banking apps now including biometric registration to their process. I think at the first club points, when the BVN system came out, you had to actually go and have your BVN done or your bank account blocked. Those things are in place, and I would say they're working pretty well. I mean, there can always be improvements, but those things are in place to ensure that if you were to commit a crime with your bank account, you can be tracked. It's not just things are not just done at random anymore. And I would say those are the kind of implementations that have been successful in Nigeria.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Larry. I think, there, like you said, there could actually be improvements on the use of biometric authentication implementations. For example, you mentioned account opening and registration of SIM cards and all of that stuff. So if you're actually walking into a bank at the moment to create a new bank account for yourself, you have to go through the biometric registration, right? So you have to capture your fingerprints, thumbprints, your full palm. Well, I think something fintechs and banking organizations need to also consider is how to actually match that particular biometric information to the secondary biometric information that is actually being supplied by users of their mobile apps. Let's say I'm actually opening an account with Bank ABC, at the moment, and I've provided my fingerprints. Then a couple of days later, I'm actually getting access to their mobile application, and I'm being asked if I would like to authenticate to the application with my fingerprint or face ID or whatever. There needs to be more that should be done regarding verifying if this identity I'm actually providing, my biometric identity I'm providing on this mobile app at the moment, actually matches the same identity I provided when I was enrolling for that bank account. I think that's actually one place where we need to learn how to implement the right technology in improving that particular aspect of biometric authentication. So Nelson, we see this fraud tactics evolving every day. How can Nigerian organizations adapt their anti-fraud strategies to stay ahead of emerging threats and trends? These guys are always going to keep coming up. They are going to come up with new ways of breaking into our systems. How can organizations, especially financial organizations, stay ahead of this trend?
Yeah, thank you so much. I think some of those security measures have really been mentioned here on the call. And I think it was Goodness that specified up small about continuous training and awareness. I think that is very key. I think that's where we need to really start from. The user element, you know, the common saying that, you know, human beings are like the weakest element. So, and he also did make mention about not just awareness, but strategic and effective. So awareness now can be, because the question is coming from, you know, Nigerian organization. Now, taking like the financial services sector, where you're interfacing with the common man outside, out there, people that doesn't even know about technology. So we have to now take this awareness campaign to the grassroots level, right? Through different media. So, you know, and different language, our local language. I think, let me give for example, if you notice this year alone we've recorded a lot of fraud cases. You know, I was going through the recent financial forum that was conducted, and you could get the analysis to see even in quarter one alone, the number of fraud cases that was reported as a result of like the cashless policy was overwhelming. Now, we were going on to a new level of, you know, bringing more digitalization to Nigeria. But I think the little was done around awareness to say, okay, if we're doing a lot of more cashless, you know, transaction, you know, people will be encouraged to use different applications, you know, buy, you know, and do a lot of transaction online with their apps, you know, wallet and all. We also need to do that sensitization. I know that there are banks to send emails, you know, but not everybody gets emails. So how can we get this training, you know, this campaign? And thanks to the committee of CISOs, I think they recently have this partnership with CBN, the NID, SS, then also Cyber Safe Foundation, you know, to drive this security culture on how to be safe. I think that's the first thing we need to do, you know, educate, you know, everyone. Because if you're providing digital services, you know, and you expect people to use applications, they need to be safe, right? They need to know how to be safe, how to identify scammers. You know, you also notice that a lot of people start getting fake SMS. You know, you do online transaction and somebody's sending a fake SMS. A lot of people are scammed through. So how do they report cases like this? How do they ensure that these kind of issues don't happen? So awareness training is a continuous thing. It's a journey. And the committee was saying it's going to take 2 years. I think for me, it's a continuous thing. You just keep repeating this awareness, especially at grassroots level. Because a lot of people that are being scammed are not just organizations. You know, they're individual people, small, medium businesses, entrepreneurs. So that's where I want to start from, right? Secondly, it's around for applications that, like wallets, e-payment system, we want to ensure like more multi-factor authentication. You know, we have banks, almost all the banks these days, you have a web payment channel, you know, wallets, our mobile application, we need to enforce more multi-factor authentication. I said it earlier, like 2FA, even on our social media platform, right, would deter a lot of, you know, cyber attacks. Even you making mistake to give out your username and password, you know, there's still this second control layer that is, you know, making sure that that data breach is not going. So how do we have to now say, making sure that we have policies. And I know that these policies are in place through regulatory standards to say, okay, internet-facing applications that are new wallet system, e-payment platform have 2FA, strong authentication, very key. You know, I've just talked about biometrics, right? Then also for businesses, Nigerian organizations should now draw more robust KYC best practices. I think that the more we beef up KYC practices, yes, it might be a bit discomforting, right? But I think it's for the best, you know, making sure that you strengthen that customer verification process before you onboard customers. So that you are not onboarding somebody that is just creating an organization and you're not asking where the fund is coming from. So you want to make sure that before you do partnership with people or other businesses, you want to conduct your due diligence. I think those are the major things. And one of the last things I want to talk about is security measures, you know, aside from getting compliant, because security is a continuous thing. It's always updating. So we have organizations having internet-facing applications that are out of date. So we need to ensure, because these guys, a lot of these fraudulent attempts are also exploiting, aside from phishing, you know, they're also exploiting vulnerable applications. Not just internet facing, but in-house applications. I think the culture of patch management, continuous security updates and software update is something that needs to be, you know, encouraged across industry. Not just having the tools themselves, but, you know, for example, recently Cisco was talking about, you know, zero days, right? These are Cisco routers that are internet facing. Within a week or two, we had tens of thousands of Cisco routers we had breached. So imagine that every other thing was right. You have all this 2FA, you know, and you have all this KYC process, and every other thing, your staffs, or, you know, you're doing a lot around security awareness training. But around the security measures, best practices in place, updating, patch management, for me, is one of the critical issues that, you know, we face. We are always reactive. We are not proactive. So I would like to stop there because of time.
So I think something I've actually experienced in previous places I've actually had to work is the constant tug of war between information security and the technology teams. You always find it difficult or find it stressful to get to implement recommendations from the information security team. And it's actually very good to see that you've actually been on both sides of that particular tug of war. So in your own experience, how do you work in collaboration with other executives, such as these chief information security officers, to actually ensure a holistic approach to fraud prevention and cybersecurity? How do you make it work?
Yeah, and thank you very much. So I can start by saying that the way they can make it work is to go outside and actually fight each other hand to hand, but that just betraying a joke out there. And what you say truly is that's exactly what you see. We see it just about in every organization where the man who drives technology and the man who drives security, they are always at parallel. All right, they're always at loggerheads, and it's a constant battle. It will always be a constant battle because, and especially in Nigeria, in the context of Nigeria, because initially we had always had the role of the CTO, or most instances they call them the CIO. We have really never had the role of the CISO, going back in history. So we have just started to see the role of the CISO in recent times. Okay, CBN, for example, recently reintroduced, 2011, when CBN first introduced the CBN IT blueprint for the banks, deposit money banks. I think they have revised it again sometime in 2014. When they came up with IT blueprint, again, the role of the CISO was not ever properly defined. Okay, it was that organizations should begin to implement some security initiatives, PCI DSS and ISOs, a couple of things on the floor as a way of combating fraud and all of that. So what happened for the banks and the financial institutions was that they used someone as typically the CTO to be able to achieve those security initiations, because the thought at the time was that security was all up. So why don't we just use the CTO to achieve the security initiative? And that's what was doing. I mean, we saw that playback from 2011 when I was trying out consulting work for the banks. But then at some point, CBN became advised, right? Because the advice was that security, combating fraud is not really about technology, okay? It's more than just technology. It's more about the people. It's more about the processes. It cuts across the whole organization from top down. So what had happened is that the CBN now came up with a risk-based cybersecurity framework. The risk-based cybersecurity framework now specified in detail the role of the CISO. And the fact that, not just gave the role of the CISO, but even specified the level that the CISO must occupy is in the banking hierarchy, and what's the word, salary, the ranking, all of that. So, you know, you have banking officer, APU. So the CISO must be an AGM and a board. All right. So now that's from the regulatory point of view, made them to be aware. However, organizations in organizations, that now became a problem. So you now have the fact that the CTO has always been a ranking person. Then all of a sudden, the typical CISOs, now CISOs may have maybe a person working under the CIO or the CTO. All right. He may just be working, it may be a network security engineer. I mean, take a look at some of the CISOs there. They might be out there. All of them were either working under a CTO, for example, or working some sort of it's a sort of technology function. They were taken out of there. I mean, for those who appointed CISOs from within the bank, they were taken out of there and made those people the CISO of the bank and now elevated them to that position that they were. All right. So you find that CISO and the CTO or CIO of the position are having the same AGM level. That alone can bring a lot of issues. I've seen that happening in a couple of banks, and even a couple of banks, traditional banks that we have. All right. I had to go back history lane just for us to understand. I mean, why this even happens? Okay. So we get to see them all of that. Now, something else about what the CISO does again, which is also not good, is because. What the CISO is now doing is that he is not aligning his security objectives with the business objectives. The truth is that when it comes to the business, the security is just a support system, all right? Just like technology automates the process, security helps to deliver those processes or those, doesn't like technology helps to automate services to customers. Security helps to deliver those services securely. At the end of the day, both of them are doing the same real thing, as in they all want to do the same thing, just that they now have two people who are doing those different functions. All right. So when we go to those organizations or we have conversations, one of the first things we usually discuss is that the fact that it's important that every single time, I mean, again, the center of most of these things is applications. Okay, you have applications that provide services to customers. We always like to talk to CISOs and CTOs for them to sit down and go back to the drawing board and say, look. We are achieving the same objective, all right? And one of the things we can do is, rather than you, whatever initiative you want to put in place, why don't we sit down and discuss about those initiatives? We talk about DevOps as a new thing, okay? As an agile kind of approach for churning out applications at the speed of business. We'll talk about DevOps. And now we have started to introduce security within the DevOps process. Security used to come as an afterthought. The same way we talked about the fact that the role of the CISO came after the role of the CTO has already been well established far in time. Okay. So it has now become imperative that because the CISO is coming late, so to say, in quotes, he wants to take a step back and begin to build security aligning to how technology is in place. So, for example, application development is one proper function of the CISO to develop applications that are used for providing services to customers. Rather than the CISO having to wait until the application is fully developed and then having to provide security, because he will tell you that, no, that application cannot go live, for example, until I have actually scanned the application or carried out vulnerability assessment and pressure testing application. That alone is now going to take a lot of time, because you now begin to identify vulnerabilities or issues, and then you have to take it back again to the developer, and the developers will have a hard time trying to fix it with low guidance, and then the time taken to from the point of development to the point of going live with the application now stalls, simply because the security CISO has been brought into that shape. So the CISO is supposed to create a strategy for him to integrate it from the beginning.
Thank you very much, Nelson. Witness.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to catch up on all the live shows right here on AfricaTechRadio.com.